We didn't have a four-room. And,
You were born in 25, so yeah. You started school in about,
I started a year
30, after. 31?
31, I think, we're here. Because I wanted to go to school, so bad, and then after I started, I wanted to stay at home.
Why? Why was that?
Well, you know how kids are. You spoil everything. But I was just saying, our grade school, Mrs. Sales, that was her name. I think she taught the primer. Well, we had a primer. Mm-hmm. That's what they call it. Then they had the first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, and the fifth grade. I think Mrs. Sales, she took up all of that. That was a lot for one lady. Mm-hmm. But she was excellent. And she's a very good teacher. Mm-hmm. And she wove those basic down in us. Basics. She didn't let you go from one to the other. Mm-hmm. You could go from one grade to the other, man, until you had gotten all those basics, especially when you start to reading and those alphabetical sounds. Boy, but she was something else on the end. Mm-hmm. But she was a beautiful lady. And then we went to Mrs. Wilson. Mrs. Wilson had the sixth, seventh, eighth grade. And Professor Sale had the ninth and tenth. Mm-hmm. I think that's where it pulled out. No, he had the eighth, ninth, and tenth. Mm-hmm. But the school basically was inadequate because we didn't have necessary things to work with. Mm-hmm. But we did have the studies. These people, man, they had to be some good people to handle all these studies, man, from that to the 10th grade. Mm-hmm. And but having adequate equipment, like science equipment, we took biology, well, we didn't have equipment for that. Mm-hmm. We had to go out in the woods if we did any biology study or whatever. Mm-hmm. We couldn't do chemistry adequately. Mm-hmm. Because we didn't have the lab. We received secondary books as the white people got through with them. Mm-hmm. You know, that is basically was with most black schools throughout the country. Mm-hmm. And everything was handed down to the secondary. My books had everybody's name in it. You know what I mean? Yeah, when I got my book, it had everybody's name in it but mine. Mm-hmm. And but even we took that. And see, this is what makes me angry a lot of time when I never cared anything about integrated school as such. Mm-hmm. Because I believe that as close-knitted as our home life was, and from our home to a school that is given all adequate equipment, mm-hmm. you understand, and necessary teachers to teach them, mm-hmm. we don't need integration. Not the idea I'm against it. Mm-hmm. I'm not really against it, but I'm not necessary for it either. Mm-hmm. But I mean, right along in there, I am really for black people learning of themselves and learning their basics, mm-hmm. With black people, like the Jews with that ORT. Mm-hmm. See, like the Jews network with the ORT. I'm more in line with that, and I think we need that. See, once we can prepare our children in every endeavor of life, every avenue, for every job possibility in life, once we can network like that among ourselves to do this, mm-hmm. and then we can say, well, you can go here, you can go here, you can go there, mm-hmm. until we're able to do that, see, we won't make it. But this is what we're trying to come back to now. Mm-hmm. Like the Jews with the ORT, like they network and they still go to our public schools. You pay for it, I pay for it. Then they come back and get in that same little circle. then out from that little circle they go. And when they get to college, they 10 times smarter than you, too. You ever hear about how smart the Jew boy is? Jew boy going to school 10 times much. See, this is what's happening. And we need that. See, but let's get back to the school. But I'm still saying our basics come better from our own people. Because they know how to deal with us more so. They have our nature. You understand? They have all our imbalances that they have them. They know how to cope with them. You understand? Whereas you go to a white person, he's been free all his life, man. He's throwing something at you. Hey, you don't even have time for. His lifestyle is entirely different. Has been for over, hundreds of years. But in many cases, they want us to jump it. Well, now here it is. We're going to give it to you. Hey, you've been living subservient, man, for all these years. And they're going to jump something in your lap like that. That's not fair. See, I think once we come up in our black school with our black teachers as youth, you know, little kids, and because they can get to us better. Probably if it hadn't been, I was never a smart student, man, never was. If it hadn't been for Michelle sticking with me, you know, and helping me, I probably wouldn't have been able to do the things I did do. And I was marveled at the things I was able to do after, you know, a few years later. I said, well, maybe I wasn't so dumb after all. I had some girls in we went to my class reunion, and she said, oh, you were the smart one sitting up in front of me. I said, how about that? I said, you know what? I said, I wasn't so dumb after all. Yeah, she said, you were the smart ones. You used to sit up in front of me. I used to be good in daily recitation. I thought, I did a lot of talking, you know, in daily recitation.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you, what grades did Douglas go to? What could blacks, how high could they aspire?
10th.
To the 10th grade.
We went to the 10th grade here, and because a lot of the kids went to the 10th grade, they had enough credits from the 10th grade to go right on into college. Mm-hmm. See, because that's why we had so many books. I used to tell the kids how many books I had in the 8th grade. Mm-hmm. We had some books, but that was to give us the adequate credits. When we came out to the 10th, we graduated from the 10th grade, you had all the credits that you would have ordinarily had at the 12th in most schools. Mm-hmm. And most of our kids would leave here. If they left here in the 9th grade and went to the 10th, they were ahead of most, like in Yates and Houston. Mm-hmm. They were ahead of the kids. You know, they had already had the, I still don't see nothing wrong with that. That was one beautiful thing there, but the only thing, we just didn't have the teachers. You know, we only had, four teachers? Yeah, that's all we had. That's when I was going to school.
You didn't see anything wrong with going to the 10th grade and then having to leave to finish school, or?
I found something very wrong with that. Mm-hmm. See, but in many cases, a lot of the kids, we have Dr. Hodge. Mm-hmm. Dr. Hodge finished the 10th grade. You understand? Mm-hmm. See what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. And she had all her credits. She's a doctor out here at A&I. Mm-hmm. You understand? Mm-hmm. So that shows you the adequacy of that little education. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean?
But blacks could not go to school with whites beyond the 10th grade.
No.
Did whites go beyond the 10th grade? In
I have to ask my older brother that. Okay. Okay. Say, Jesse. Yeah. What about Henrietta High? Did Henrietta High have the 12th grade? We had the 10th grade. We went to the 10th. Yeah. Okay, that's the way it was. He has a right. Mm-hmm. We went to the 10th, and the rest of the high schools at that time went to the 11th. Later years, they added the 12th. Mm-hmm. That's the way it was. Okay. But I know when you finished here in the ninth, man, you, I went the ninth. When I went to Cove, I didn't have to take too many subjects.
That was in Corpus?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I graduated from that, but I didn't have to take that many subjects because I had done just about all of them here, you know, in this little school.
Did many young people have the opportunity to do that, to go to Cove or to Yates?
I would say so, because most blacks here, parents was brakemen, and they had the adequate resources to send them, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was one fortunate thing. The parents did have the money that they could send the kids off to college. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had that. But the only bad thing about it, after we finished that 10th grade down here, we couldn't go to Henrietta High. Mm-hmm. I had to go 40 miles. I had to leave here and go to Corpus Christi. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even play football because I had to get me a little job, man. You know, I thought I was a pretty good little football player, but I had to get me a little gig, to sustain myself.
What about those families that didn't work for the railroad? What were their lifestyles like in Kingsville? Were they accepted by the rest of the community?
Everybody. Mm-hmm. Everybody. Just like a big family. Mm-hmm. It was no family here. I look like we just love everybody. Mm-hmm. Because just like Jesse would tell you, man, everybody could whip you, you know. And everybody was your daddy, Brother Daddy and Brother MacDowell. Everybody was your dad and everybody was your mother. Because you get out here, you know, and they would be watching. I told you, boy. I told you. Come on over here. And then you start to cry because you're going to get another when you get back home. Mm-hmm. See, they call that, later on I found out what they call it, extended families. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what they call the extended family. Mm-hmm. And man, it worked. Mm-hmm. Because it has worked all through my life, I swear. And I always thought I was a pretty rough dude, you know, temperamental-wise. Mm-hmm. But it has. It worked. It worked. Mm-hmm. I give Kingsville that credit. A lot of the kids have become very fortunate. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just... my brother Jesse was telling me about James Buchanan. And went off and became a full star with Colonel. All the guys seem to, that left here, did very well for themselves, you know. Mm-hmm.
Tell me, did you ever know of a Klan being organized in Kingsville?
No. Mm-hmm. No, I never did. I never did know of no Klan.
Ku Klux Klan.
Somebody mentioned, so I don't know, but I don't know anything about a Klan being organized. Mm-hmm. Okay. But I know before Bonnie was telling me something about some type of disruption he had with the law here, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, you had races on that police force, the law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And I think you had that all over. Mm-hmm. And you understand this. It was a reason for that, because you had a place, and you always had races there to keep you in your place. You always had one, but we had pretty good rapport with our Jim Scarver, and he wasn't too hard on us like that. But yeah, you had them, you had them here, you had them all over. Don't ever forget that.
You mentioned Mr. Bonney. I understand that he was pretty active in the community, and I don't know if this is something that you'd want to even talk about, but I was interviewing another person, and Mr. Bonney was allegedly abused by the police here in Kingsville. Was that an occurrence that happened frequently, or was that just a one-time thing? Not just for Mr. Bonney, but other people in the community.
Well, any personality like Bonney, that then Bonney was he had one of them outgoing personalities, and would get into trouble, you know. But wasn't necessarily a bad person. But there was a lot of gambling and things going on down here during that time. And I think we're lucky, a lot of us, to come out of it as well, as because gambling wasn't controlled in Kingsville like it should have been. See, it ran rampant here for a long time. And guys out of Houston come in here, and since these brakemen's making all this money throwing it away, you know, they come here and gamble. So a lot of bondage problem probably came out of some of that, and out of racism too. They didn't like Bonnie because Bonnie would say what he wanted to say to white people. You know, white people don't want you down here at that time, didn't want you to say what you had in your mind to say to them. You understand? So in many cases, Bonnie got in trouble with the white man. They want to hurt him, you know, make an example out of him and all this kind of stuff. And we had another man here that stood fast. And I remember Mr. Webb, he knew Al Jay wasn't the best boy in the world, but he wasn't going to stand up and let the white people beat him. Because I remember I was standing right out there in front of his house, and they came up there to get him. And Zach Webb stood out there with that 22, that automatic 22. And nobody going to bother my son. See, either I'm going to die, that's the way he would, they went and left him alone. See, but that type of stance, you know, white man didn't necessarily like that. You know what I'm saying? As long as you could be submissive to it and you will be the father, you know, everything was all right. But we did. We had several blacks like that would stand, you know, just like that. And Bonnie was one of them. He just opened that mouth and said, what do you want to say? And so you had, it was a, you can't say, I've heard a lot of people try to brag about Kingsville. And the only good thing came out of it at this time, since racism was as prevailing as it was, you know, throughout the country. Mrs. King gave blacks this opportunity to work, you know, make their own living, and gave them that. That gave these blacks here a little prestige, you know. And they, when they went places, they felt big shotty, like, you know. They went up to New York, when they took the vacation, they had money other blacks didn't have. You understand? They had homesteads many blacks didn't have. Now, you got to give Kingsville that credit, because many black people were able to build homes here and raise their families and nice yards and things, and feed them adequately. When you go to where I am now in St. Louis, man, people's in poverty. I mean, poverty. If you want to, they were something else. And I didn't realize black people lived that bad until I did go there. Now that's one thing that you can kind of throw a little light on, a little difference way that they did live, you know, that way. But they still had that problem. They still had the basic problem every other black had. In these United States. But in some instances, man, you could go different places and they just survive better. I mean, you look better. You had black people during the time they call it the height of the Depression, was around driving their cars, paid $700-$800 for a car. Whereas in the other parts of the world, black didn't even, was still riding the buggies. You know? So that did prevail here.
You mentioned gambling being running pretty rampant here in Kingsville. The high salaries and the easy come, easy go attitude with many of the brakemen and their money appears to have sort of like a trickle down effect. And I'm wondering here. Was gambling a way in Kingsville to, I guess, support some of the other people that would come in here as drifters, didn't have work, couldn't get work on the King Ranch or some of the other institutions in Kingsville?
Well, you could say that. You could say that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could say that. you know what, in many instances, well, you did, you had blacks. I heard a guy was talking about, he said, man, I heard about Kingsville when I was a little bitty fella, you know? And it was just like, it was a place where blacks just couldn't imagine that blacks own these type of jobs, you know, and was scared on them. Live that way, you know? And we did live sort of carefree. Mm-hmm. People here did live that way, you know? And in many cases, you know, white drifters from other parts of the country would come through here.
Come through the quarters?
Come through the quarters. Mm-hmm. And blacks would, whatever jobs they would hire them, you know? He did that. As poor as we were, we hired some. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, you could say that.
Did you ever know of any blacks working for the ranch, the King Ranch?
The only person I knew who worked for King's Ranch and did it indirectly was my brother Zeke. I don't know what really, I don't know what he was doing out there, because when he started working out there, well, first he was barbecuing for him. But no, I can't say no. And I don't know any blacks. Hell no. Let me ask Sonny. Ask Sonny, Mike. Say Jesse.
Hey, Jesse. Did you ever know any blacks
working
for the King's Ranch? I mean, I'm not talking about like
They had
a black man at the
gate one time. They did? Huh? Well, I don't know nothing about it. I really don't. As far as I'm concerned, I would say no to that, because I don't know, we had no blacks going out there, and they hired us to work, gave us any type of position or job. I don't know of any, really. The railroad was given to us, and that was it. And King didn't do anything like that for blacks, you know, holding them to responsible jobs and things like that.
Out at the ranch.
Out at the ranch. No. I don't remember that. The only thing we did, the only thing Deke did was every now and then barbecue for them. And well, I wouldn't consider that. Nothing. I don't consider that. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, we talked earlier in our conversation about blacks on this line being unique from the rest of the blacks working for railroad companies across the country. Can you say then that blacks in Kingsville were truly unique in the fact that they held breaking jobs from any other railroading
company?
Yeah,
I can see that. I can see that. Yeah, definitely. I can see that.
We had black porters.
Yeah, we had black porters. We had the black, even on the passenger, we had the porters and the brakeman, the flagman. You know what I'm saying? And in our yards here, we had black foremen that switched the cars. Your daddy. See, some of our best breaking. And the one was married to Nellie Brooks.
Floyd.
Floyd get out there and sing, and boxcars be running 100 miles an hour, man. Look here. Nobody could beat him. Floyd Brooks. I used to give him that credit, boy. He would have cars running 10 different tracks at the same time. Bam, bang, bang, singing and looking at the switch list. That's how good he was. He's one of the best. I'm telling you, he's one of the best. And those type of jobs, boy, they were unique for black men, you know.
You didn't see it up around Chicago?
No, no, you didn't see that.
West Coast?
Mm-mm. that we were unique that way. Mm-hmm. You could come down here and I guess this is why a lot of blacks here, they felt so proud, you know. Mm-hmm. The only thing I hate, they just didn't do enough with their monies. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's the only thing that I hate.
Did they not know what to do with it, or what was the problem there?
I think it was the town was small. They had no projection of a need for themselves. Mm-hmm. See, we're getting back to your church thing now. Mm-hmm. See, where you have a basic attitude of what you are about. Mm-hmm. You were working, you had a good job, and hey, you didn't think about the needs. Mm-hmm. We didn't project this, and even in our children, the needs. Mm-hmm. We only think, well, we had enough money to send our kids to school. Yeah, so-and-so, he's going to Prairie View. Mm-hmm. It's how to live in a house. And it's beginning to be that way around here now.
In Kingsville?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You have homes for your destitute. They never live in a house. They live in these projects. Mm-hmm. And everything's the same. But in Kingsville, we had yards. And we could play around the yards. We made our own playgrounds and things like that. And our mother made us get out there and clean the yards. Mm-hmm. That's one thing we were used to. We learned how to live in a house. You understand? Mm-hmm. Whereas in many parts of the country, black people don't know how to live in a house. You know, you put him in a house, he starts writing on the walls. He think the walls to write on or knock down. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. See, but we came up in a little different atmosphere like that. Mm-hmm. And I think it bears out because most of the kids, I know during my generation, just a generation, well, it kind of stuck with us, you know, mm-hmm. like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly appreciate you taking the time to sit down and talk with me, and this has been a most interesting and informative interview. And I'm certainly not saying this to be just complimentary, yeah. But I think that this has been one of the better interviews that I've had since I've been working on this project.
Oh, it is.
And I'd like to just thank you.
If I have contributed anything, yeah, I have. I like that. Do my best.
Okay. Okay, we're going to go back here and touch on a subject and an issue that I think is very important with Mr. Cornell. Deals with his dad back during the 30s developing some type of fire control system in the old engines, but we'll talk with him a little more about that. Okay, why don't you explain to us best you can what it was and how it worked and the actual results?
Well, they were having problems with the brick in the locomotive, in the firebox, mm-hmm. Falling down. And they would have to stop periodically and make these adjustments, cool the engine down or whatnot. But anyway, Daddy came up with an idea that which would stabilize the firebox. Mm-hmm. It was a stabilization system that he created that stabilized that firebox, where they had this problem no more. Mm-hmm. And he was supposed to have been, for this particular suggestion, he was never given credit for it. And that, I remember one time he came home and he was telling us that he was told that they were going to give him a job of inspecting, going all over the Missouri Pacific, wherever Missouri Pacific ran with this type of system, mm-hmm. where he would be the crime inspector, but this never transpired. And nor was he given, you know, like he would be given money for even a suggestion. He wasn't even given that.
Was the idea ever patented?
The idea was patented, but Daddy didn't receive nothing from it. He got nothing from that. Because I remember many times my daddy used to have to, when the engines would come in here, and he had to repair these old firebox, and he had to put on some kind of shield and get into a burning firebox. That's why my daddy was burned up like he was, man. He had sores all on his arms and things like that. He was just that daring, a worker for the Missouri Pacific Railroad. And when he get in his firebox, he would do this repair work and come out of it. But finally, he devised a method where these bricks wouldn't fall, but he never got credit for that. Never got credit for it. It was all in the Missouri Pacific papers, you know, magazine. They had a Missouri Pacific. You probably do a little research and find out that write-up, you know. Because I'm quite sure it was written, the article was written about him. That's been quite a while. I imagine it's destroyed, or maybe they have put it into the library. I don't know.
Did if your dad wasn't the one to go around and inspect the other engines, who did it? Was someone else hired to do it?
Well, I couldn't answer that. I really couldn't, because I don't know who took on that responsibility after that. But I know he was promised that, but he was never given that. Because we were thinking that he was going to dress up in his little suit, go up and down the Missouri Pacific all the way to St. Louis and be the prime inspector for this, because that was his job. He's very good at that. And also, he's very good at putting those flues in those boilers. He did all of that. So that probably, but I just hate today, you know, and when I look, many times I would look at my daddy all burned up and what he got out of it, you know, being a good worker. See, wasn't adequately compensated for it.
Did your dad have someone else over him at the time? Someone, a foreman or a supervisor?
Yeah. I think Olson, old man Olson. That's what we used to call him, old man. You know, you couldn't call him. You didn't say mister, you had to say old man. But Olson was, I think was his chef. Who was Daddy's shop foreman, Jesse?
The last one was Schultz.
Schultz, R.V. Schultz.
Schultz and,
Wasn't Olson something? Well, I'm talking about prior to Schultz. But I remember R.V. Schultz because he used to be a... He was over the bar, but, you know, he was a baller maker himself. And later on, they made R.V. Schultz a foreman. But it was one prior to Daddy, and prior to Schultz. But Daddy should have been given all that credit for, you know, prior to Schultz. Schultz didn't do that much in the way. He didn't do it. You know how that was, man.
Okay. Well, again, thank you very much. Let me ask you, are there any other areas, before we stop taping here, are there any other areas that I haven't touched on that you think are very important to this whole conversation centering around Kingsville?
Oh, he has a name now. Yeah, it was Sadler.
Sadler.
The guy we were talking about, Sadler. That's the man should really have been. I knew because Schultz was. I remember when Schultz became foreman. It was in the 40s. But this guy, he superseded Schultz. And Sadler was the one that was telling Daddy all these things. You know what he was going to do, and they never None of them. I don't know. I really intricately, I don't know how they worked it out or why Daddy never did. You know, I don't know anything about it. Because I never questioned Daddy about it. After he didn't do it, like Daddy was, he just went on and just bowed down to whatever it was and left it alone. And then you asked me, is anything that's pertinent?
Yes.
Relative to mm-hmm. black?
Mm-hmm. That we haven't discussed yet, that you'd like to discuss?
I imagine it is, but I just, man, I guess you would, most, just like a lot of time you might mention something and bring it up, mm-hmm. you know, and then I probably could elaborate on it a little bit more, but mm-hmm. Just taking the whole community as a whole, we knew that in this area, we weren't potential farmers because that was limited to blacks in this area, and because my Uncle John, he came here from Tavola, and well, matter of fact, when Uncle John came here, the Pullum, when he came here, and stayed with my mother in our backyard, and she went and got him because actually he was working on a farm, a ranch, or something like this. And so he had asked my mother, could Daddy get him a job on the Missouri Pacific Railroad, so railroad, you know, working in the shop. So he did that. Uncle John came here and my mother housed him, you know, right there in the backyard, right 530 West Johnson, right now. And Uncle John started working in the shops. And he didn't work very long, but there was something came up, and a little controversy. Uncle John couldn't handle a lot of the prejudice over there. I think this white man met my uncle a different, thought he was a different type of man than those that was working there. You know, Uncle John wasn't that submissive, in, you know, in his nature, and he had some kind of friction over there with some getting ready to whip somebody over there. So Uncle John quit and he tried the farm here. And that was limited because old man Dealer Forrest and Wanagie and all of them, they had all the farmland around here. So Uncle John he managed to rent some land here and grow a few bales of cotton. But becoming ownership of anything, that was impossible for a black to do. A lot of people might not mention that, but it was, for you to own that kind of land, it was almost impossible for you to buy, say, 300 acres of land in Kingsville, a black person.
Even if they had the money.
They weren't going to sell it to you in the first place. See, a lot of people don't want to mention that fact, but that is the truth.
So many of these families that I've heard about as farmers, they were either sharecroppers.
Sharecroppers, that's all you had. They wouldn't like the Martins, see, sharecroppers. But to buy that land, they wouldn't sell you that land.
I remember the Lambs.
Lambs, yeah.
Farmed, but they didn't own it.
But then on an ounce of it. Uncle John wanted to buy farmland, and he couldn't buy it at that point. They wouldn't sell it to him.
Did blacks ever try it? Did they ever try to buy the land?
Well, Uncle John told me he tried. And that's the only source I could get that from him because.
And he was told because you're black.
Well, I don't know whether they put it to him that way, but he was unable to buy it. You know, so I don't know whether. They wouldn't just come out and say, well, you are black and you can't have this. It was already designed and planned that you couldn't have it. Like so many other things been designed and planned. And we just fall into the pattern. You understand? You can create a condition. And there's a cause and there's a reaction to that cause. And that's what we've been living under all these years, man. Cause and then the reaction.
Can you remember when the Celanese plant was built?
Yes, yeah, I really do. Mm-hmm. And during that time, the Celanese, where we weren't allowed, we weren't a lot of blacks tried to hold jobs there. But they tell me they have a few there now. Mm-hmm. It's not that many. Mm-hmm. But blacks are trying to get hired out of the facilities. But it was that many, though.
Was there any type of controversy in the building of that plant in Kingsville during that time, especially in the black community? Were there concerns to come out of building the plant?
Yes, it was, because of the environment, you know, it was so strong. At night, you could smell that chemical plant, mm-hmm. you know, while you lying asleep, man. You could smell that. It was sort of nauseating, but, you know, I know now you don't have that. I mean, since I've been down here, you've been living in this area since it has quietened down, hasn't it?
Only when the wind changes directions and come out of the north.
Oh yeah.
Then you can really still catch a,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
a good but
it was of yeah, it was terrible when I was coming up here when they built that thing. Mm-hmm. And they were, but really, I beckoned things like that to come into the area because mm-hmm. we needed more, you know, industry just close to Kingsville, you know. More diversity, you know, rather than the railroad, you mm-hmm. had something else. Mm-hmm. But even behind that, they didn't hire us mm-hmm. at that point. Mm-hmm. And now they tell me they hire a few mm-hmm. people now.
What was up there at that time? Basically Anglos and Hispanics?
Yeah. Or
mm-hmm. were there even any Hispanics up there?
I don't know, but I know no blacks was.
Yeah.
we weren't up there, man. Mm-hmm. Shit. I doubt if we could get a broom's sweeping job.
Well, you mentioned something a little earlier in the conversation, and I wanted to mention it to you, and it slipped my mind. You were talking about football. Douglas has had some fairly good athletes to come through mm-hmm. That school. Tell me a little bit about the sports programs down there. What did you guys have? Were you ever champions?
No. Mm-hmm. We were never champions. We played good games, mm-hmm. and we had too many inadequacies there. I mean, we didn't have, you know, we used to compare that we had to play on the ground, where the white boy down here, Henrietta High, played on the wood. Mm-hmm. And
what do you mean play on the ground in the wood? Well, where were you playing?
Well, we played basketball. To play football. We weren't given the money mm-hmm. to buy togs and helmets and all. If we were going to do that, then we would have to depend on the community for that, mm-hmm. you know. And no, the school didn't afford us that type of activity. We afforded our sports, mm-hmm. ourselves. Mm-hmm. And our basketball uniform we made. We weren't even didn't even afford, but Henrietta High had all of that. You understand? Mm-hmm. But we got out there and played just as hard, and we won a lot of games. We lost a lot of them. But mm-hmm. We had a pretty good, and especially baseball, endo ball. We had a good team, mm-hmm. but we never had the uniforms. That's another. I really hated Kingsville for that, and I know they could have given us uniforms, man. You know, mm-hmm. I'm trying to think what I've forgotten what you call us, Frederick Douglass Dragons, I think that's what we were, mm-hmm. something like that. Mm-hmm. But we never was able to get the uniform, or we never to get the like playing basketball. We didn't know what playing in a gym was. That's the ball on the floor was, but we figured, boy, we could put it on the floor. Mm-hmm. Hey, man, I know we'd be great. Mm-hmm. Shit, yeah, boy.
Were you in school with Preacher Pilots?
Yeah.
And, Bill Watson?
Yeah.
Lulu Watson?
Lulu. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Y'all, Lulu was under me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. a pilot. He was a little ahead of me. Mm-hmm. And pilot was a very good ball player. Mm-hmm. And I still say, man, if we had been able to have the equipment and stuff like that to play, I think we would have done a whole lot better, man. Because we would make them trips and we would win. We'd beat Victoria, man. And all our little men, most of our guys on the team, we call it Mickey Mouse. Mickey. You remember Mickey?
No, I don't.
His name was Roosevelt. Who was Mickey's name? Roosevelt Jackson. But we used to call him Mickey. Mm-hmm. Mickey was no taller than, I think Mickey was 5 feet. A 5'4". Mm-hmm. But you're talking about could play some basketball. He was very agile. Mm-hmm. You go all between your legs. He could dribble the ball and shoot as little as he was. It didn't make no difference. Mm-hmm. It didn't make no difference how high that basketball. And you know, nobody 5 feet three, you would consider to be a forward, would you? He was. I swear he was just that good. Yeah. And, Norris Hodge, all those guys was good, man. Pilot, both of them Pilot boys was excellent baseball player. Mm-hmm. And when Frank Henry and them was done, that's a different time. Man. Mm-hmm. Frank Henry and them was really good, boy. Really? Tall Frank Henry boy, he could pitch that ball. He could play basketball, whatever. Mm-hmm. They could do it all. Felt himself.
Now, were you working for the railroad when the railroad used to have their baseball team and they traveled from town to town?
No, I was kidding. That was Booster's Club. Mm-hmm. They had a good ball team then. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They used to go all in Louisiana and everywhere and play. Mm-hmm. And I think Mr. Hall, Willie Hall. No, was it Willie Hall? Okay, he used to live right down the corner there.
On Johnson?
Yeah. He was the manager of that team. Mm-hmm. And had some unique players like Lamb, Eli Lamb, and guy they used to call Shine. Mm-hmm. Used to be one of our main pitchers. Mm-hmm. Jim Wilbert. Mose Rogers. Some of Elijah Thompson, Elijah. Mm-hmm. Now you had Sam Adams. Mm-hmm. All of these guys, man, if they were ever given an opportunity to be professional football or baseball player, mm-hmm. you had a guy like Little Tom Edwards, mm-hmm. best shortstop, one of the best shortstops. I tell you one thing, Sam Adams was the best shortstop I ever seen in my life as a kid. That man was something else. And Elijah was the best first baseman you could have seen, man. Mm-hmm. We had some excellent, these guys were really pro. Mm-hmm. Eli was pro. Mm-hmm. See, these guys were pro ball players. They didn't miss nothing. You could hit the ball so hard he could go behind the fence and get it. I climb over the fence at that time, man. They were just that good. These guys was good, man. And but I see not all of them, but the guys like Elijah and Sam Adams, mm-hmm. they just came too early, mm-hmm. you know. Little
before
time. Yeah, before their time. Mm-hmm. These guys were pros, even when they caught that ball. Mm-hmm. They could, man. They used to put on, and Willie Moore, you probably know him. Willie Moore mm-hmm. came on a little later. Mm-hmm. But Willie Moore was excellent. But what Willie Moore would do, I used to try to stop him from doing this. Mm-hmm. I said, Willie, you're too good a ball player. You don't need to show much here. Mm-hmm. We know that you can get the ball all kind of ways behind you. But he would just show off and just catch that way. He'd be running and catch this way, you know. He'd be running, hit the ball, bam! He'd run it. He could turn around and catch the ball, but Willie would prefer just catch it while he's running from it. Just showing off. So I told her, you have to show off. Yeah, we know you're good. Mm-hmm. And see, I think that was his only fault. Mm-hmm. He would want the showmanship, you know. Other than that, he was a very excellent ball player. He could hit, could all of that. Mm-hmm. Oh, that was a beautiful thing, man. They don't have no, you guys don't have no ball team down there now, do you? All of that's gone. Oh, man. At least that's where, you know, we spent our energies that way. Mm-hmm. And I remember the 30-30s was here. That was an all-Mexican team. Now, that was a good team, too.
Mm-hmm. Did the railroad team play them?
Ever yeah. Play them? Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Never could beat the 30-30s, though.
Never could.
30-30s had an edge on them some kind of way. Because they had some guys on that 30-30 team, though. They could hit that ball. I was small, but I can't even really remember some of the guys' names. But they had a very excellent, 30-30s had a well-organized team. Mm-hmm. It was so much, it was better organized than our thing, you know. Yeah. I don't know whether they played the Monarchs or not the 30-30s. But you know the Monarchs was, they played the, St. Louis Browns and beat them.
Really?
Yeah. St. Louis Browns and beat them. See, that's during Satchel Paige time, man. Mm-hmm. Hey, man, that was an elated thing when I was coming. I could listen. I always wanted to see Satchel Paige when I was a kid. Josh Gibson. Mm-hmm. I heard so much about these guys, man. Mm-hmm. And then John, listen, who did he play? He played for the Kansas City Monarchs, but a little later on, he played for Cleveland, didn't he? Satchel Paige, he was a pitcher. Boy, that man, I got to see him in person. I really finally got to see him in person. Man, all them other pitchers, like Dizzy Dean, back in that. See, he was the equivalent. Mm-hmm. He really was. See, and
just back didn't in the, get the record.
That's right. Mm-hmm. See, that's what happened with Josh Gibson and this other dude in St. Louis. Oh, what they used to call him. Boy, I got so much. I'm trying to think of it. You got the stamina. You got everything you need. All you need to do is do. Whatever you want to do. I'm going to tell you, okay? I'd be on my little young people in St. Louis, man. I don't let them come up and tell me. I don't let the young people come up and tell me, well, I didn't have a chance for this and I didn't have a chance for that. And you got caught up in a peer group thing. You got a little, here's a dude not doing anything. And you adhering to nothing. Yeah, old Tom, yeah, man. He have a good time. Mm-hmm. You know how we can get caught up with the peer group? Mm-hmm. That's another thing. We're going to have to teach our children to be their own individual. Forget about that peer group. That peer group can kill you, boy. That dude across the street over there look like he's doing all right. We had a lot of them when I was a kid coming up. Oh, man, he would walk around. Hey, had them pants on, you know, those drapes they used to wear. Uh-huh. Oh, man, he'd be bowing in one knee, bending in another, breaking all heads in two. Got that chain going. It's nothing new. You understand? Mm-hmm. Taking him a swift off the reefer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, now, that's one thing. In Kingsville, you know what? We were out burning the stuff up. We didn't know what it was about. That's the truth.
Burning it up.
We burn it up, you know, because it was an old man out here on right by these houses. My nephew Raymond and I, we used to go out, man used to give us $1, and what we thought $1 was a lot of money, to burn up those, they call it local weed. And we were burning the hell out of this stuff, and we didn't know what it was. And I'm glad we did. I'm glad we didn't. Cows was running in, eat the stuff, and go butt the brains out. Hmm. That's what people do. A cow could, a bull could eat that stuff, and he'll get to a tree and he just kill himself. Mm-hmm. They call it local weed. But we didn't know nothing about that, man. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad we did. But I'm just saying, come to find out, we had guys coming here from Chicago, mm-hmm. New York, coming down and said, what are you doing way down in here, man? Mm-hmm. He's down here looking for that local weed. Let me tell you, these dudes coming down here, man, breaking off. And you know what? We didn't know why he was here. Mm-hmm. I was got way from. Well, yeah, paid some money to come down here then, you know, on the train. And here the dude with his gray big old hat on, man. He's sitting up there looking cool. Yeah, man. All that kind of. Well, a lot of kids adhere to people like that. You understand? Because this dude was getting the stuff, taking it back to St. Louis, and he was standing up there selling it on the corner. You know, don't you know one of these guys I saw down here, I met him in St. Louis. I'm sure y'all beat the world here, man. And he finally left the stuff alone as an old man and started trying to take care of his family. And God blessed the man to retire beautiful with a beautiful pension and everything. But he talked about that now. When I met you, man, when I was... Yeah, man, I was on that stuff. Mm-hmm. See? He come to find out his life went the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. In the first place, man. Mm-hmm. Ain't no big gain to that. Now, when I find out, I say, yeah, if I have to live like that, you know, no way in the world I want to have my mind messed up. It's mm-hmm. already psychologically messed up. Mm-hmm. You understand? It's hard enough for me to project now from whence I came. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. From which my ancestors came. Mm-hmm. See? The hard times that they had and all these bombardments. In my mind, I don't have time to put no dope in there. Mm-hmm. I really don't, man. I don't see why you won't. Look at, they have already made a dope out of you. Why be a dope? You see what I'm talking about? What you need your mind now is for projection, man. Hey, we found out later, after a while, we found out we could play baseball. And we didn't, for a while, we didn't think we could play baseball as good as the White Bulls. Because we didn't have no big major league. We didn't think we could play basketball as good as the White League. Because you weren't allowed to show your potential. But since we've been able to show our potential, we're just as agile or better. Play baseball, agile or better. You know what I'm saying? In a school institution, just as smart or better. So we can kind of take the shackles off a little bit. Off of that, say, hey, yeah, hey, man, you know, take the shackle off, man, I can play basketball. Then you say, hey, man, I've got a mentality, hey, almost supersede that white boy. Beyond. You can start taking the shackles off, man. For a long time, the shackles were put on that and say, well, you can't do this. And when people told you, you can't, you resigned to that. You know, most of us did. But no longer. You don't have to do that. Take the world wide open to you, baby. I was glad your daddy was talking to you like he was the other night. Because I love you too. But you think I don't. And that's another thing we're going to have to do. Just start loving one and the other. You understand that? Pick up our little brothers. Let's make brothers, you know? Let's help brothers in all endeavors. Man, if you got something going on, don't be jealous of your brother. Get in there and work with it. Help him project, you know. You project and help him. You don't have to go or put clothespin on your nose to make them a little narrow. You understand? Or push your lips up to make them thinner. Leave them like they are. Hey, baby, you're beautiful. You understand? Because God put that melon in your skin so you could absorb all the sun rays. We the only people can absorb that sun ray. That's why you got the moves in basketball. Like, yeah, man, you know. See? Because those sun rays, we absorb that sunlight. We're sun people. We have sun. We don't reflect nothing. He put us that color so we could absorb it. Now, all sorts of energy come from where? Come from where? The sun. Without the sun, man, you don't have no earth. All sorts of energy comes from that generating sun, man.
Teenage pregnancy, and you were sharing with us some of the ways that we might have to try to deal with it, and just some of the problems that are related to teenage pregnancy. How are the institutions, you think, in Kingsville dealing with the black teenage woman or youngster in terms of this whole teenage pregnancy issue? Are the institutions set up to deal, to counsel blacks, black women, black youngsters, black youth?
No, I don't think they are, because since I've been here, I've seen several teenagers expecting mothers. And I'm not the one to insinuate that the school is fault, you know, but I want to say, let's go, come in.
Okay, we were talking a little bit about the institutions in Kingsville, and you were starting to talk a little bit about some of the problems that black youngsters have in their interacting with those within those institutions.
I think what we need to do is to make a dent in this whole thing. And I'm going back to this again. We're going to have to include. I know some people say, "Well, anybody should do this. A professional can do this." And don't have to. But we're going to have somewhere in the school system some black counselors and black instructors. We're going to have to do that because a lot of the blacks just don't understand. The teachers that they have, but teachers don't understand either. So that passed that I'm not talking about the language barrier, but I'm talking about just don't understand each other. And that's what I see, you know what I'm saying? And if some way, I don't have to come up with some blacks somewhere that blacks can relate to and go to and talk to. Well, we got counsel. Experience counsel, all that, well, that's all right. But still, we're going to do that if we intend to get to some of these hard problems. I was coaching football in a black school, and the kids would come to me before they would go to their parents. They would come to that, the lady coach, where the girls would go there, would come in the ladyhood, they would go there and talk with this coach. But then their parents, and then they would call the parents in and get them down. I would do the same thing. You know, I have young men that finished and played football for me all over the state of Texas. And they walk right in this office right now and say, "Thank you for what you did for me. Put me on the right track." Some, you know, I had some time to put a bit on the right track in a little rough way. But, you know, but at that time we could do that, but now that's all kind of law now. Hell and all that, but this is what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. They're gonna have to be in some responsible places. Like, well, we need classroom teachers, classroom teachers, but in counseling and shaping lives, we're gonna have to have that. It's far cry now for people to think that we're so integrated. We're so integrated. It doesn't make a difference. I hear a lot of this. gotta make a couple of teach, you know, they ought to learn, you know, a lot of people learn about that. But and then you're gonna have to get the right kind of African American counselor. You might get one on African American as we all. You know, I'm saying just put African American everywhere. I'm talking about one that really get to the student. Yeah. And that student is gonna respect it, that student gonna love it, that student gonna come to that person with the problems. Yeah. And that's what we need. That's what we need, somebody to do it.
When you say way off, a black who is way off, can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have some black folk that kind of caught up in this thing with integration, you know. They're going right down the line, and I'm not saying it should get out of the system, but a lot of times the system needs to be corrected. But I'm saying that they're at the point where they're thinking the same thing. Now we got a problem of a black coming to judge a cheerleader or something, and the black judge hard on the white student and other judges. So this kind of thing, I'm not talking about she was an official. I'm just talking about her expectancy level might have probably higher than the other judges. That could be the problem. She expected the blacks to do better than the other people. But why would you think that way? You know. But that's what I'm talking about, just like that. And intentionally good. I'm not saying it's a poor teacher, it's a poor judge. I'm just saying, and sometimes you get African American teachers, her expectancy level is too low for blacks. So it's going to be some right between that, too low and too high. It's going to be some in there that the teacher, instructor, that counselor, that coach, whatever it is, can get to this black student. And you see the dropout rate. Do you know we're sitting here right now, 4,000 students a day is going to drop out of school next year. They're not all black, but 38% of them. They're going to drop out of school. That's goodbye, I'm going. You know, they come up with all kind of tests and all kind of everything else. I don't know how much good it's doing, but, you know, we need to have somebody, if we're going to go to the testing, we have to have somebody to get down with that student and tell that student, this is it. You're going to have to get it. Like I said, I worked in one. And then all black schools were segregated. I mean, it was segregated. We didn't even go across town, you know. It was segregated. Everything was segregated. We didn't even, we weren't included in the budget. It was segregated. I'm talking about segregated. And we had some teachers and instructors that were concerned, that would stay there all day and all night, that would go by the house after school, you know. Well, we got some situation now where the head coach never seen a football player until practice time. And I was coaching, I was in the home. I was everywhere. You know, practice time, after practice time, that's it. I see you last practice, I see you Friday on the football field at the game. You know, we got this situation, and you're going to have to be that, this coach. You're going to have to be, and I was just like, and they looked on me, just like a daddy, you know, you didn't come to me, you know, probably. But I'm not saying I was all of it. I'm not saying that I was much better than anybody. Person, but I'm talking about simple stuff. What I'm talking about, you don't have to have too much savvy, you know, to do these kind of things. This is simple stuff that I'm talking about. We're going by the house, checking with the parents, checking with that student. And I'm getting something, I'm saying, you know, we had a curfew. We had a curfew, man. You didn't see any of that football player play with me after 10 o'clock at night, out there on the streets. And I didn't have to go down there on the streets. But the captain of the football team would go down there. Captain of the football team go down there. If there's anybody down there on the football team, they'd see him coming. And they would run like a scared rabbit. Didn't want him to see him because you know what they practice what they're gonna have to do. They're gonna have to put some pressure on them. They're gonna have to stay a little while after the scrimmage. So all these kind of things. I think what we need to do is look at these things. Well. Some of these educators, you know, they might say, well, this won't work today, but how do you know? It might work. Why don't you try it? Why don't you try some of these things? And I think some of these things in school, what we're doing, would help. And this teenage pregnancy bill is going to have some mothers and some women in the school that these children could confide in and talk with, and you know, some parents these girls can't talk with. And they, like I said, they rather come to a person that they confide in, a person that they respect. Or, you know, they respect the parents, but not that much. The way they go forward and tell the mother, I'm going out tonight, and I think I'm pregnant. You're not going to look and tell mama that.
Okay, you've pretty much touched on the other problem that I wanted to talk on, and that was education and the dropout rate. Let me ask you, we look at police relations and the relationship between police and community. How would you characterize the relationship between the Kingsville Police Department and the Black community, Sheriff's Department and the Black community? How would you
characterize it as unfinished agenda. I don't care what kind of chief police you get, it's not integrated situation, you have problems. Like, yeah, maybe I'm, you know, getting on slip too heavy, but I think just a black policeman, I mean a real police, going through a community, African American community, does a lot. Just going to it's really helping and doing what it's supposed to do. A real policeman. I think when we have to, you know, like I say, the agenda is unfinished, and what we need to do is look at maybe desegregating all of these institutions. Like, say that desegregated, but how can you have a sheriff department a black owner? How could you have city police department and not even a janitor department? How could you have city council with not a black owner? How could you have a city government with only three blacks? Goes back to the point where people are saying, well, we just don't have any blacks in Kingsville. Mm-hmm. We don't have any qualifying blacks. Man, it's called, you know, it's people walking the street looking for a job, you know. That's qualified. Mm-hmm. Recruit those folks and get them in. Back to the whole thing, you know, they can easily say and put it on paper, and it looks good on paper. That the percentage of blacks not the way it should be, we don't have any blacks at. And then I think that looks good. You know, so we can't find any blacks. That's what they're trying to get right on that thing. We don't have that. What I'm saying is, move outside of Wisconsin and recruit some people. Go to New Orleans, go somewhere, go to Houston, go to Chicago, anywhere, you know. One of my jobs, Brooks, when I was in the school system, every year, I would go to every black university or college whenever they would have seminars, and they would have forums, and they would have graduating seniors to meet the recruiters, and we would going there. There are people there from Michigan. People interview a person from Michigan trying to get her to come to Texas for a job. Mm-hmm. And she was willing to go. In fact, I brought the application back to the superintendent and the board, and if they responded, I don't know, but I know we don't know. But that's what we had. We would go there and we would recruit and we would find teachers. We would let teachers know. And we would have everything laid out for us, and the salary, the school system, the size of the school system, the number of students, all some of the problems and some of the things in the city, some of the social activities. We'd have all that laid out. and we were talking to the people. But now it seems like we just rely on somebody to walk in off, you know, anyway. Just walk in and say, I want a job. But if we tend to desegregate all of these institutions, we're going to have to recruit. We're going to have to go get folks. As large as Houston is, that's a daily task for them, going out looking for people all over this nation. I want you to say most of the cops I know, the chief of police, Lee Brown, I know he's black. Ain't nobody, no question about that. He's black, and like I said, with my recruiting him, Henry Q recruited black policemen all over his state. And I bet you to say the largest percentage of those policemen right there in Houston, they were somewhere else. They're not people like that in Houston. Houston, 3 million people. But the smaller towns, the smaller cities, they're going to have to go through recruitment more so than the largest cities because of the percentage. Because of the, if it's in a place where Hispanics are smaller in percentage than anybody else, go somewhere else and recruit some Hispanic. There's some cities in the state that not very many Hispanics in. But if you're in a city where there's a small percentage of Hispanics and you don't have any Hispanics in the police department, the sheriff's department, anywhere else, I bet you to say somebody will go get some. Go out there and recruit some folks. But why is it so hard to recruit blacks? Somebody said, well, they don't want to come to Kingsville. Somebody said, well, the salary is not right. Well, the living condition is not right. But recruit other folk, and it's all right with them. That's what I said on that. You know, the whole thing is desegregation. Mm-hmm. The whole thing. All these departments, all these school systems, is desegregation. I mean total. I don't mean total. I don't want to put about that total. I mean you got to desegregate. And that's the problem we have not only in Kingsville, we have a problem anywhere where we're dealing with percentages.
Does racism still exist in Kingsville? And if so, overtly or covertly, is it?
Well, yeah. Yes. In some cases, overtly, some cases covertly. Yeah. And it's not only Kingsville, all of this nation. Yeah. We're dealing with that now. Yeah. We're dealing with some problems. There were some problems of racism. There were some problems that blacks, even it's not only blacks, and some blacks don't want to be integrated with some other. But this thing is really hurting. This thing is really hurting this nation, and we need to get ourselves rid of all of racism wherever it raises its ugly head. We need to get rid of it, get racism, but it still exists. And it's, you know, I think anybody will tell you, you know, it's. That's racism. I think everybody can hide that, you know, you can see it. Okay. Dealing with that, if you notice in all of the systems, it's a nation of systems and school systems, all they were kind of systems. You know, they were just systems. And all of these systems, from the administration, federal, on down, is going to have to look at desegregation. And wherever they find racism in these places, they're going to have to get rid of it. And somebody seemed to be happy with it. And, you know, how different races are treated. And not only African Americans, but the different races. And we're going to have ourselves a country that's powerful and fluent, as we hope for it to be, we're going to have to look hard at this problem of racism in this country. these cities, these towns, we're going to have to look hard.
When you first got to Kingsville, did you know that you were in the black community, per se? Was there any giveaway that this boundary from Kennedy to Caesar to Armstrong to 3rd Street
right.
was a black area?
Right. You can tell in any city you go in. You can find those other black areas, and that's from gerrymandering. And putting blacks in any place out of gerrymandering, you know, and that's what they're doing now.
Okay, you had just started to talk about gerrymandering and how blacks, not only in Kingsville, but in other parts of the country, are steered to certain areas of town. Could you want to continue on that?
Yes. When you're talking about the African-American community, usually what they have a dividing line, the track, you know. Say across the track, you know, most African Americans across the track, and it's out of history. It's a long history of this. See, that's where we've been all the time. A few of them move out and get out, but the majority of the blacks remain in that area. And it's like here, you know, when you get across, when you turn off King Street, you know where you are. See, you know, this is a black community. It's not all the time a place where it's unkempt. It's not all the time a place where, you know, where abandoned property, all these things would show up as in there. We have that all over the city. But it's something about the black community, something about the streets, something about the lighting, something about the housing, something about will let you know time you hit a city that you're in a black neighborhood. And that's not all King, you go Houston, you know it's good when you're in Fifth Ward or Fourth Ward or where it's predominantly black, where it's all black. You know in all these cities. It's economic, and it's lifestyle, and it's all these things go with it. It's the character. It's the way that property is kept. So, once again, you know, we have some of the same situations in all parts of the city here, but you can tell when you're coming back. Not the black communities, and that's a blight. That's something that it should be. And I think we got large in Texas. Black neighborhoods, the streets not paid. You know, it's black on the road. There are places where we don't have, but somehow we got all the streets paid here. But still, you can tell when we're in the black community. Even though you don't see many on the street, you can still tell.
Okay, Brother Simon, we're just about to wrap up here. Let me ask you, are there any areas that you would like to share with us? Any areas we haven't covered here today that you feel deem important enough to want to talk about? Please do so if you...
I think what we're trying to do now, in the direction of the mayor of the city, we're trying to establish a human relations commission, which is maybe in all cities, maybe here. And I think we need the citizens and politicians and all these elected officials should put all of their energies in trying to develop this commission, because I think it'll be helpful, or some of these organizations can't be. I think the commission will be so interwoven with the city commission, the county, and with the government, city and county governments, they will be so close to it, and the commission can, the liaison from going from the communities, all the communities in this city, this county, from people, there's a lot of times people in position, a lot of times the commissioners, a lot of times the governor, I mean the mayor, big part, the mayor is not aware of what's going on. Say, for instance, in the Hispanic community, in the Black community, in the Caucasian community, they're not aware, but you got somebody as a somebody there watching, somebody there sitting, somebody have forums and talking with people, forums and talking with people, and having meetings with people in these different communities. And we can put our hands on some problems, and we can go right on to the mayor, right up to the top. This commission can do human relations. If we find any human relation problems, and we'll find enough to keep us busy in this city. I think that's one thing I think of. But we need to work on it. We didn't cover that in this. We're trying to formulate this commission now. We get it together, I think, in all aspects. I mean, this will cover a broad spectrum. This will cover all the things that we didn't cover. This commission will do that. Because there'll be an education, there'll be in housing, there'll be in labor. We have five different things we're pinpointing that we're going to deal with. And this is our agenda. We're going to do this. We're going to deal with we've got housing problems. We're committed to look into that. If we have problems with education, problems in the school, human relations problems in the school, all these things we went over. We're talking about desegregating the schools. Desegregating the schools. We've talked about that here. And this commission could deal with that. Could deal with education, and housing, and labor, and all these things we have. But we can have that city know. So we're working on this. We're working on this every week. We're working hard on this to get this formed. We're making some changes. But I think we're making it. So that's one aspect that we didn't cover. I think we hit all the bases and dealing with in this interview. But if there's anything else you think of, you want to ask me, feel free to do it. Okay.
I think that we've pretty much covered all bases here, and I'd like to just thank you for taking your time and certainly taking the time out of your busy schedule to sit down and do this interview with us. I'd just like to, again, thank you on behalf of Joe Graham and Dr. Green and Tony Bouquet out at the university. And I hope that the remainder of your stay in Kingsville is a productive one.
Well, I appreciate that. And thank you very kindly for thanking me for this interview. So I was happy to do it. And if I missed anything, I would like to do some follow-up, I'll be available.